You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Today's reading is called The Triple Filter Test by the prolific author Anon. One day, an acquaintance met the great philosopher and said, "Socrates, do you know what I just heard about your friend Plato?" "Hold on a minute," Socrates replied. "Before telling me anything, I'd like you to pass a little test. It's called the Triple Filter Test."
"Triple filter?"
"That's right," Socrates continued. "Before you talk to me about Plato, it's a good idea to take a moment and filter what you're going to say. The first filter is truth. Have you made absolutely sure that what you're about to tell me is true?"
No, the man said. "Just heard about it and,
All right," said Socrates. "So you don't really know if it's true or not. Yet you may still pass. Now let's try the second filter. This filter is kindness. Is what you are going to tell me about Plato something kind?"
"No, on the contrary."
"So," Socrates continued, "you want to tell me something bad about him that you're not certain is true. But take heart. You may still pass the last test, though, because there's one filter left, the filter of helpfulness. Is what you're going to tell me about Plato going to be helpful to me?"
"No, not really."
"Well," concluded Socrates, "if what you want to tell me about Plato isn't true or kind or helpful, why tell me at all?"
Thanks, John. That little story has a punchline. Want to hear it? What the gossiper was trying to tell Socrates is that Plato was having an affair with his wife, which wasn't true. Plato wrote an epigram about a Xantippe, and Socrates was married to a woman called Xantippe, because it was a different Xantippe that Plato was writing the epigram about. The reading is an example of what's called the Socratic method. Socrates, uniquely in philosophy, made no claims about what was true or good or necessary. Instead, he asked questions of others' confident, common sense truth claims and kept questioning their answers until at some point their confident claims would fail. Then, something wonderful could happen. Those who could bear the sting of their own ignorance found what it is to be human, how little we actually know for sure. That, in turn, could lead to the self-examination that makes life truly creative, explorative, exciting, worth living. Famously, Socrates said, "The unexamined life is not worth living." So life is worth living if you are prepared to undergo searching and fearless self-examination. No wonder Socrates was murdered. But examining yourself fearlessly, revealing the limits of your own knowledge, is tough, but it helps you build a better, humbler, more truly human person. As you might guess, Socrates' approach to truth accords well with our Unitarian principle, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Socrates' triple filter test is less about abstract philosophy than about everyday truth claims we make and we hear in the form of rumors and gossip. Applying it has become perhaps even more useful in the age of social media and fake news. How do we know what is true? How do we know what news we should heed? To help us, here are some additional questions that can help you unlock this when it comes to applying the triple filter test. Is it true? Do I know for a fact the information is true? Would I bet on it? Would I be able to prove it to anyone? Am I willing to risk my reputation on this truth claim? Tough questions. Is it kind or good? Does it benefit me or the other person? Will it make them or me a better person and evoke positive emotions? Will the situation of those involved improve? And finally, is it necessary or helpful or useful? By knowing this message, will that person's life or my life improve? Can that person take any practical action regarding this information or message? The practical action an outraged husband might take could land you in jail, so maybe not for Socrates. In what way does not knowing this information hurt or affect the other person? So there's some little bit more unpacking those three filters. So gossip and rumor mongering is not just an offense to decency, but to truth itself. And we'd all automatically agree with that. I can see a lot of heads nodding and people going, yes, yes, yes. Until we remember, we do this ourselves a lot. But hearing the story, the triple filter test story, allows us to flatter ourselves, because when we finish the story a little wiser having read it, we come away identifying ourselves with Socrates. In fact, if we fearlessly self-examine, we probably have more in common with the gossiper. Back in 2011, I did a researched report into conflict in congregations, and it showed me from various sources that a great many church communities are hotbeds of malign gossip, and where gossip lives, conflict itself is never far away. The research suggests that gossip in churches is a function of a restlessness that can come with a constituency, many of which are, I'm sorry, I'm just the messenger here, retired. Like small villages or like the small elite of Athenian citizens who didn't have to work, gossip travels at precisely the speed of boredom, creating drama for drama's sake. Drama, after all, is at the heart of all entertainment. Also, the research suggests that churches tend to attract people who tend to be non-confrontational, and so gossip is a clandestine way to fight at a safe distance. But paradoxically, this is the kicker, gossip is also often cited as the top reason for why people leave churches. Apparently, people come expecting more, expecting better, expecting greater virtue from a church community, and are shocked, when it turns out the church is very much like the rest of the world. Quelle surprise. So while gossip's common, it's not exactly advisable for a church if it wants to be a peaceful place. However, let no one, least of all my flawed and fallible self, get all self-righteous about it. We've all done it. We've either spread it ourselves or allowed others to, at one time or another, whether you're young or retired, male or female. And that becomes a justice problem. Because what is said cannot be unsaid. And there is a story taken from the Hasidic tradition that perfectly captures the unfixability of damage to a community through gossip and rumor. Story goes like this. It's from the Talmud. Once upon a time, a man went about his community gossiping, spreading malicious rumors about one of the community elders. Well, many people heard him and began spreading the same gossip themselves. Some others in the community, however, didn't spread it. Some others in the community simply turned away or changed the subject when he tried to engage them. A very few in the community reminded him of the proverb, "For lack of wood, the fire goes out. Where there is no whisperer, quarreling ceases. As wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife." That's from the book of Proverbs, and the Talmudic saying that the tongue is an instrument so dangerous that God kept it hidden from view behind two protective walls, the mouth and the lips, to prevent its misuse. So they reminded him of these Jewish sayings, and gradually over many days it began to dawn on the man the harm he was doing to the community through his disparaging words. So he became genuinely filled with remorse and sought forgiveness. So he went to the rabbi. The rabbi called the elder in who he had offended to meet with him. The elder arrived, heard the man's confession, and he said, My friend, I see you are truly remorseful, brother, so of course I forgive you. Then he thought for a moment. Well, if you had stolen from me, I could ask for repayment, but Rabbi, how can the harm he has done be repaired? So the rabbi said, I have a way. He said to the gossip, go home and bring me back a feather pillow. And I was like, well, this is easy. So he ran home, got a pillow, and dashed back with it. Now cut the pillow open, the rabbi said. He thought to himself again, this is easy. And scatter the feathers to the four winds. No problem. He goes out on the balcony and scatters the feathers to the four winds. He did it quickly. He shook the pillow vigorously. All the feathers drifted hither and thither and yon in the wind. Now go gather up the feathers, said the rabbi. Man was dumbstruck. But rabbi, that's an impossible task, he said. Exactly, said the rabbi. You cannot make amends any more than you can gather those feathers. Words, my son, are also like arrows. Once they are released, they cannot be recalled. The harm they do cannot be stopped. And the harm cannot be predicted, for words, like arrows, often go astray. So that's a story from the Hasidic tradition. But wait a minute. Isn't gossip just human nature? It absolutely is. In fact, a recent study by the Berkeley School of Social Psychology suggests that gossip fills useful social functions as well, and so is helpful in our evolution and is therefore embedded in human nature. Some gossip is beneficial if it involves warning newcomers to a community about who can and can't be trusted. So the motivation can be a good one. It can help others avoid danger. The study found that gossip also helps maintain social order, as the threat of gossip deters people from behaving badly. However, this needs to be carefully distinguished from malicious gossip, the intent of which is simply to tarnish a person's reputation or to advance the gossiper socially within the community. So, self-examination and self-knowledge is again needed, as Socrates says, to figure out whether one's gossip is the well-intentioned or the malicious kind. Now, this is not easy. The trick to it, and there really is only one trick, is being fearlessly honest with yourself and admitting your true motives. The malicious gossiper in the Hasidic story is ignored and challenged only by a few people in the community. These people are just no damn fun to gossip with. And while they don't chide the gossiper directly, they do remind him of Jewish law and custom, and thus of his duty to God. But such reminders are not always easy to tell yourself in the heat of the excited moment. People always think they're proceeding from good motives, trying to be helpful or working for the good of the community. Even Hitler thought that. So what could be, say, the true motivation of Socrates' gossiper from the triple filter story? What could be the motivation for that? Well, since we have no window into that person's soul, we'll never know. Just as we can't really discern the inner motives of other people, we have no window into the souls of others. So our business is not to figure out other people's motives, but to guard our own speech, about not speaking of what we don't actually know, since there is so little we actually know firsthand about others. Think about it. Most of what we think we know about others, we take by report, which means on faith. Life would be unworkable otherwise. Imagine running around trying to factually verify everything you ever heard about someone. So it's probably no bad maxim to default to this. Of that which we do not know, we should remain silent. Now, it's clear why we might offer helpful gossip or gossip which maintains the social order, but why, oh why, do we so commonly indulge in the malicious kind? Well, the Berkeley study suggests people often do it to feel good about themselves, for the ego boost they get from enumerating somebody else's shortcomings. It makes us feel superior to the person we're talking about. And it makes us feel connected to the person we're talking to. It establishes a kind of rapport. But reducing another person to make you feel greater is a pretty cheap zero-sum game, a kind of race to the bottom. And why would we need to do that unless we are feeling, well, less than ourselves, hurt, angry, lonely, threatened, envious. Remember, too, it's in the very nature of church communities to invite and welcome in the marginalized who may indeed come with low self-esteem issues already, who come seeking validation and belonging and love in community. Isn't that one of the reasons we're here? So rather than examine and work on one's own low self-esteem, it's always easier to give in to human nature and malign others to bring them down to one's own low self-esteem. There's a name for this in Australia. Tall poppy syndrome, anyone? Perhaps low self-esteem, speaking of churches, is why the Christians eat their God every Sunday. Another reason anyone gossips is, let's be honest, gossip's exciting. It's one of those guilty pleasures like booze and fried food. Look at all the tabloid magazines and websites peddling dirt on the rich and famous. Obviously, there's pleasure in cutting them down to size, our size. Everybody wants to be the one that comes into the group with the goss, the skinny, the dirt, the inside story. Like telling a joke, for a moment, you are the master and focus of the group's fevered attention. In short, it's about power, which is a heady thrill for those who need to feel empowered. And why would you need to feel that? It's so exciting, it can make us forget three things. To put ourselves in the place of those whom we're dishing the dirt on. How would you feel if you were being maligned? We also forget that pleasure of gossiping is momentary, but the damage can be irreparable to reputation. Shakespeare said, "Who steals my purse, steals trash. 'Twas mine, 'tis his, has been slave to thousands. But he that filches for me my good name robs me of that which enriches him not and makes me poor indeed." And we often forget maligning someone automatically alienates you from them, sets you up for guilt and shame and possible retaliation if the other person finds out, which they often do. And if you gossip with the same people all the time, you've created a faction, a community divided. But even more than these forgotten things, we also forget the sheer power of words. Judaism has always been intensely aware of the power of speech and the harm that can be done through speech. On Yom Kippur, the 43 sins recited on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, 11 of the 43 are committed through speech. The greatest of which is Lashon Hara, the evil tongue, which involves saying negative things about someone, even if the negative things are true. A rabbi would remind you that the universe itself was created through speech. Let there be light. Even we Unitarians come to worship that is encoded primarily in words, which we know words have the power to move, to lift, to heal, to change, to inspire, to cue action. People even put words on their damn gravestones. So knowing the power of words, why do we persist in using them carelessly? The good news is that we can do something about the evil tongue in our own mouths and our own communities, whether it's church or work or neighborhood or whatever. The research reveals, happily, some tried and tested wisdom out there about this. First, assuming we are being gossiped too, the simplest and least confronting thing to do is, like the people in the story about the feathers, make yourself boring to gossip to. Decline the offer by changing the subject. Excuse yourself politely. Don't confuse walking away with weakness. Take strength. And if you feel sufficiently bold to stay and respond, simply say these magic words: "Have you spoken to them about this?" You watch the wind go out of people's sails when they do this. It's like a spinnaker spilling the wind. Or if you're feeling a little cheeky, you can always say the panto thing: "They're behind you right now." And watch them jump. If we want to be a little more demanding of ourselves, let us assume that we are the gossiper, as we so often are. Both stories are blessed, as you'll remember, with those that pluck up the courage to challenge it. Socrates' gossiper is educated by the wise man himself. And the man in the Hasidic story is, in fact, capable of remorse. So these are good signs. If you are blessed with enough insight into yourself to discover yourself gossiping or spreading rumors, or if it's pointed out to you, self-examine. Again, there are time-tested steps you can take to begin to break the habit. Think of all the times you've repeated this person's name negatively, and then ask yourself, why am I really tearing this person down? What is at the root of this? Could it be a case of projection? Or ask yourself, would I be saying this if they were next to me? Or ask yourself, how is what I'm doing actually helping anyone or anything? How is this making a better community? Finally, you may want to remind yourself of an old truism. Great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss things. Small minds discuss people. Why not reach for, if not great mind, at least a better one? Principles before personalities, as the dear departed Audrey Abbey would say. Will we ever become perfect at this? Will applying this wisdom eradicate gossip from our communities? No. No. Unitarians have no saints because we know we are no saints ourselves. Am I right? Nor for that matter are we wise rabbis or great philosophers. But friends, we can be better. We can do better. What is any religion or spiritual practice for, if not to keep evolving us for the better? Bringing us closer to the better selves we know in our hearts we have yet to be. It's no good wishing for change. It's no good trying to engineer change in others. If you want to see a change for the better in your church, in your workplace, in your community group, you have to be that change. You have to. But take heart. Human beings are highly adaptable critters. You got to want it. If you don't want it, well, nothing's going to change. We're not saints or martyrs, we're not rabbis or philosophers, we're just people full of imperfections, weaknesses, and vanities, and also great potential for transformation and for good. This is why we, like many other Unitarian churches, have covenants. A covenant is not a law or rules, but an agreement between members of a congregation to work together according to the principles of their religion, or to commit to try at least, knowing we'll both succeed and fail, and when we do, pick ourselves up, examine our failings, resolve to do better, and recommit to the covenant. These are on your pews. You might want to have a look at them. All churches, I feel, would benefit from the Jewish tradition of Yom Kippur to set aside one single day a year where we annually self-examine, take stock of our transgressions, make amends, and refocus ourselves on loving kindness to one another. Yom Kippur is called the Day of Atonement, a word which means reconciliation, at-one-ment. At-one-ment, to return ourselves to harmony and accord at one with one another. It's not a pun. That's what atonement means. Rituals of atonement recognize human fallibility, recognize our capacity to change, and recognize the usefulness of making amends. Think what that would be like, how freeing and how more serene our inner lives. Now, Yom Kippur, coincidentally, well, actually not coincidentally, is fast approaching. It's October the 9th. So taking a cue from Judaism, I hereby announce today as our one annual day of atonement. Now, there's no need to recite a Yom Kippur litany of sins, or to seek or give apologies, or put on a hair shirt, or flagellate yourself. Instead, let's use a little ritual we already have. Let's do the collection of the offering during coffee time today. And I invite you to put as much money in these vases as you think represents sufficient atonement for your quantum of annual gossip. Now remember, with Yom Kippur, it represents a whole year of the normal gossipy lives of about 45 or so. So any reasonable person might expect these jars to be full. By the way, that represents all my available cash as a way of saying I do not pretend to be holier than thou. No. If you're light on cash or cashless today, make a note for next Sunday and give a little more. Now look, neither I nor the church profits by this, because this church is a not-for-profit organization and I am paid a fixed stipend, not a commission on your sins. So the church and I do not profit, except we do profit, think about it, as a community by this mindful atonement, an opportunity to consciously recommit to our personal part in maintaining this beloved community. We Unitarians think we're so smart, so much smarter than those old dumb religions, good at examining their many flaws, but how often do we actually self-examine and reflect on the power of the words we use? We are a church, and people do have a right to expect better from us. Well, we should do better, and we can do better, and we will do better, not to be holier than thou, but to make this place a holier place. Amen. And there's a hymn about that. When our heart is in a holy place. Margaret will play it through once. Please stand as you're able.
When our heart is in
This is taken from Ephesians. We know our tongues often get ahead of our minds and hearts. We are quick to speak and have cause to repent of the many thoughtless things we have spoken. May we see when we are about to speak without thinking and to examine our hearts. May we be slow to speak, and when we do, may we be filled instead with loving words, full of your holiness, blessed Spirit, full to overflowing. Amen. Have a great fortnight till I see you again.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.